Hi everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 19 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Injury Podcast with me, Philip Eidson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and owner of Peterborough United. And we missed last week, we did Thursday, Friday the week before, but it was a really busy week last week with transfer deadline and you're traveling and we've got a lot to cover. Let's start with the deadline and then kind of go from there. So deadline day, Jed Steer. Let's start with Jed Steer. So Jed Steer left. You let him go and came back at the last minute. So how did that all kind of work itself out?
So we were really hamstrung with the wage cap. And people were kind of asking me, going, but you let a left back go, you let PK go, you let whatever. So what I'd done is I had in the module left PK's wages that we'd agreed to pay to the end of the season there, just in case by some chance we could...
He was available again.
Correct. So I wanted to leave it there. I didn't want to touch that space. So everyone knows in August what happened. Clark Harris was going to Bristol Rovers. It was 700 grand, but wages saved, it would have been over 800-900 grand minimum in our model cap, which would have left us some space. I went and signed two players, Malik Mudassar, Jacob Wakeling, thinking, and it still would have left us maybe a little bit of space for January and improving. But you really have to do it right because, look, the EFL are really, I commend them for it. You know, they will embargo you.
Yeah.
If you go over, you get embargoed. And worse than that, If you go over purposely and squeeze through, they'll embargo you in the summer. You don't give a fuck about sometimes a January embargo, but what you definitely don't want is a summer embargo where you're over the limit. Like last summer, I had a real problem signing players and doing deals and whatever until we'd done the Taylor deal because we were just, right there in the bubble. So Jed was on a short-term deal and we were trying to bring him back in with a similar thing. Obviously, there was the whole I'm a number one, number two thing. That's not a me problem. That's a manager problem. That's up to him with the boy. I have a really good relationship with his agent, who's like a big hitter with Stella, who doesn't usually deal with League One players, but I have a great relationship with him. So I'd landed in the States on, when was deadline day, Thursday?
Yeah.
Right, so I flew home on Wednesday. I had to go home for a college thing with my son, even though I was meant to be in Sky on deadline day or whatever. And everyone was a bit surprised I was traveling, but I was on an airplane where I thought I'd have internet. Mm-hmm. So... the biggest disaster was I paid $7,000 for business class and BA, so they don't do it first. And it's the oldest fucking plane in history from Gatwick. And I'm half an hour into it and there's no fucking Wi-Fi, which is an unmitigated disaster for me because I expected in this day and age, every plane you get on, you get Wi-Fi.
Yep.
So I'd be able to answer emails, offers, deal with this, deal with that. I'd prep Barry, the manager, Liz, anyway, that for 7 hours I'm in the air, do this, 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 and this.
That must have been a pretty excruciating 7 hours for you.
It was terrible. It was terrible, and I'll tell you why. So anyway, so I land. I've got 82 emails the minute we get into Florida airspace. It's like 9:30 UK time. And one of the things was, at that point, I'm like, it doesn't look like there's any way we're going to fulfill that PK thing.
Yeah.
You know, da-da-da, the wages and whatever. But we were paying a good chunk of his wages, so there's a good bit of space there. So I rang Baz and I said, look, get on to David, the agent of Jed. Offer Jed this. Come in, compete with Nick, but better than that, help Nick, help us win promotion. Come into the end of the season, we'll give you that in wages, but I'm also going to give you a bonus. I'm going to give you a figure and a bonus to do that. And Jed was, Jed's been brilliant. He's as good as gold. And I understand, he didn't leave because, he left because there were loads of circumstances involved. So it was always a case of we wanted to kind of bring him back. And it was a bonus for the manager. You know, look, Nick's our number one. We signed him. He's got 10 clean sheets. He's done fucking brilliant. He's young and he's going to be he's probably the first goalie we'll ever make money on. And he got an injury, a bad one, that kept him out. And Jed's come in and done fantastic. But we've then got, obviously, Finn, who's a penalty eight shootout expert. We're going to try and get him out alone for a while. And then we've got our own, in-house young goalie who's been with us for a long time, who we thought might be our number one this year. So we've actually got a lot of goalkeepers in the goalkeeper department. You know what I mean? So Will Blackmore, by the way, is the name of the kid who's our own goalie, and he's had a tough year. But he's now back from his hip surgery in, I think, 4 weeks. But basically, I said to Baz, get that in from, see if it can be done. Nice little surprise for the manager. Mm-hmm. Was able to get that done. But obviously, I had offers from Coventry in my inbox that had been sent at 10 in the morning when I took off. And there were deadlines, involved in it and everything else. And they were blown because I didn't get any emails.
Because they've got to figure out if they got that or whether they got to look somewhere else as well. Of course.
But so how it all transpired was Coventry, a couple of weeks before, had already reached out to us, and they'd also, their owner's a good guy. He's a great guy. They got Dean Austin to their deals, and then they got their owner, Doug, and he'd invited Baz down there to have a coffee, get to know him, and start a relationship. So I kind of knew. Barry rang me and said, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, it's obviously about one of our players. Go and do that. Mm-hmm. I said, it's good to have relationships with good clubs. We've got some really good relationships. Brentford, other clubs we have. Coventry are a club in the up. They're going to be in the Premier League eventually. You know, with all due respect, they're a bigger club than us. Yeah. So, you know, down the line, if they're back in the Premier League and under this owner, I think they will be. It's great to have, you know, we've got Luton, great relationship. We've got Brentford. We've got mm-hmm. a few clubs like that, you know. So I said to Baz, go and have a coffee. Barry rang me on the way back and he said, look, he said, you know, they really want Efron and also a couple of our other players as well and whatever. And I said, well, you know, I don't want to sell Efron. You know, I don't want to sell any of our front four. Yeah. It was like Ronnie, then loan back, great, fine. You know, I don't want to tell my manager I'm losing one of our front four because, you know, it'll probably A, assassinate me and B, fucking walk. But no, Darren knew the situation. So we'd always had a hole. We knew what was facing us, you know, in this window and then the summer onwards and whatever. So anyway, Coventry came in with an offer led by Doug. And I then went back to them and said, look, guys, we're so appreciative of the offer. And I don't want to sound ungrateful. You know, A, it's no to that offer. Yeah. B, if you do want to buy him, it's a loan back because we're not losing him. And if we were going to sell him without a loan back, it would be ridiculous numbers, but we'd have to get a replacement.
Yeah.
So they made a couple of more bids leading up to it. I went backwards and forwards with Doug. I dealt with him direct on emails and whatever else. And I'd given him scenario A, scenario B. Scenario A was a higher number
mm-hmm.
and they take him, but I didn't want that to happen. Scenario B was a lower number and we get him back.
Yeah.
So Darren, the day before, said, what do you think is going to happen? I said, look, forget it. Don't worry. You know, we're not doing anything with Efron. It's a day to go. We had two replacements we thought about, but we couldn't get them. They were unattainable, you know, that late and whatever. And I got on the flight and thought nothing of it. But obviously, I got off the flight and there's another offer from Coventry. So anyway, I drove home. My driver took me home and seen my wife kids for 4 weeks. So it's like now about 6 o'clock US time, which is 11 o'clock UK time. I had a chat mm-hmm. with Baz. And I said to Baz, look, you know, you got to go back and tell Coventry on the offer. You know, it's late in the day here. We've got a day to go. This isn't going to happen. My pitch always along, not pitch, but my thing to them was take him, do a deal. I don't want any money now. You can pay it in the summer, whatever. Yep. But I want him back on loan.
Yeah.
Like, I want him back on loan. That's more important than the money. And it was actually $750,000 less money to do it the way I was suggesting because I wanted the player. And I said, you're getting a player that I'm going to want more money for in the summer, but you're getting him at today's price. They were kind of like against that. Then I got a message on my phone from the Coventry owner, who's I believe he was in South America or somewhere on the way to Antarctica on some personal travel or whatever else. And he's like, is it okay if I call you? I've never spoken to him before, just by email. At this point, I've had 7 beers because I haven't seen my miss. I haven't drank for a month. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I messaged him and I said, look, I'm going to warn you. I've had, you know, quite a few drinks. I said, so anyway, so he rang me. We had a really, really good chat. 42 minutes we spoke about football. We spoke about, you know, what happened to them last year in the playoffs. Or spoke about deals, spoke about whatever. And he said, look, what's it going to take to get done? I said, look, Doug, it's late in the day. I want him back. I don't want to let him out of building. And he was just like relentless. He was like, no, that's, you know. So I just said, look, let's just leave it. You know, my advice would be take him back, you know, buy him. Give him back on loan to us. You know, you get him in the summer. He's one of the best players outside the Prem. He's going to be, you know, he scores another 10 goals. He wins player of the year in League One. He's going to be, I'm going to ask for more money.
Yeah.
You know, he already couldn't believe what I was asking for, you know, for League. But I'm like, this is what we do at Peterborough. So I often know how important a player he is and why your manager wants him,
yeah,
you know, for their left side. So obviously the player and his agent know all about it. They want to go. Of course they do. Yeah,
it's a big paycheck for him.
A big paycheck. It's life changing. It's a big move. Yeah. But at the same time, Efron was brilliant, whereby he didn't cause a ruck. Yeah. He didn't do what previous players have done and go, I'm not playing, I'm going on strike. Anyway, so then I got a message at like 1:30 in the morning my time from Doug again. And he was like, this, and this. And I was like, oh, this is crazy. So I went back to him and I said, you know, option A is this, only if we can get a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of running out of time. I'm going to be up at 6 a.m. my time, which was 11 a.m. UK time. Yeah. In the meantime, I emailed Barry Liz, the manager, and said, try and find replacements. You know, if we can get the replacement we've identified, we'll let him go.
Yeah.
If we can't, I'll say no, you know, and don't let him out of the building. So, you know, I said to Liz, don't let Baz let him out of the building if he's driving down to Coventry or wherever else. That's a joke. So I got up at 10 to 6 my time in the morning. I've had 3 hours sleep. I'm an absolute bitch. So I rang Barry and I said, how are we getting on with the replacements? He was like, no chance. clubs want too much money, they won't come, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I let Coventry know. Obviously, they were, you know, I won't say upset with me, but, you know, they did everything in their power to try and get him permanent. The player at this stage, obviously, is like, I want to go. I rang Darren, and Darren's like, you know, what are you going to do? This is a, you know, massive amount of money. And it's, people are quoting like three and a half, and it's more. Mm-hmm. So I said to Darren, I said, no, I'm not letting him leave. Nobody in League One would have done that. Nobody would have, I'm not trying to give myself credit, nobody would have turned down what we turned down. And I did it because I didn't want to stop what we're doing. Even though we're trying to sort our bills out, we're trying to sort all the issues out and whatever else, I just feel something special was going on. And I didn't want to let that specialness leave the building.
Yeah.
So as the day progressed, obviously, the Coventry owners messaged me again, and they're trying. And I've just gone back and said, look, guys, I apologize. I couldn't get a replacement, so I can't do this. But again, I go back to option D. So it's less money. You don't have to pay me for the summer, onwards and whatever else. Don't care. I just want the player back. They were like, no. Then I've got, obviously, the same championship club from the summer starts bidding for Ronnie.
Okay.
So this is at 5 p.m. You ask my wife, I'm sat in my dining room. I've got two phones, my English phone, my American phone. Barry rings me to tell me plan B is on with Coventry. This is at 5 o'clock. Then he rings me 10 minutes later and says it's not on. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we're trying to get a right back. So I'm dealing with that. I'm dealing with Barry. Then I'm speaking to the manager. And I'm dealing with also an agent and a right back. We feel we've got the right back. We've got a deal agreed. Then the manager finds out stuff he didn't like about the right back. Then he rings me and he goes, let's not do this.
Yeah.
Let's not bring the player in the building. Let's not do this. So I'm like, shit, okay. We've now got, it's like 6:30. I'm like, we're running out of time here. And he goes, we'll be fine. We'll be fine with Jadell. James Donnelly, we just got to get him back quicker. We'll be okay. And I'm like, are you sure? 100%. We have the cap space now. We can do this. Then I got this agent ringing me about the Ronnie thing. And because it was out of England, we have to do it. He has to get in the car. And I said, at that point, I said, no, I'll do Ronnie in the summer. Mm-hmm. No. I was just like, no, this is too late in the day. And I'm definitely not losing two players who are coming back on loan. I'm like, no. I was Watford, who were in for Hector at the same time as well, like 2 hours earlier. So it's all like this. Then Barry and Liz ring me at 8 o'clock. And they're like, Coventry, you want to do plan B? So I'm like, okay. But now you've got, the player's got to do a medical. The paperwork will happen in August. Yeah. But most important about the paperwork is, until I see all the documents for the loan signed, I'm not signing any paperwork whatsoever. It's not that I don't trust them, but if that gets lost with the EFL, I'm losing the player. The loan paperwork gets lost. I'm taking less money than what was offered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking no money now, and suddenly, because of the paperwork, I'm not getting the paperwork on loan. So now you're a race against time. I promised all of the fans to do a Twitter Spaces.
Yeah.
I've gone on that. I'm reading a 50-page legal document while I'm on that answering questions. I should never have agreed to do that, but I felt bad if I'd let the guys down. I've then got messages from the manager. We're talking Efron, right back, How I didn't have a heart attack from the 22 coffees and everything going on. And for, you know, my kids are back from school at this stage. They're winding me up. All I can hear from my kids is, Baz, is that you? Because that's what I call Barry. And I'm just like, stop, you know. And I swear to you, I counted afterwards, 188 phone calls in like 7 hours. It was just mad. But we probably had more offers for our players than any other football club in the football league. And I felt when a window was done, and when Liz sent me the loan paperwork signed and everything was fine and we did it, I felt we did great by the player. We took less money.
Yeah.
Player got his move. We got the player back. I felt we did great by Coventry. I'm really happy he's going there because I think he'll blossom in Mark Robbins' team. Oh, and Doug asked for an option on one of my other players as well, you know, because they like quite a few of our players. So I felt we did good by them in the end. Even though they didn't get their player, you know, they still have a good team. I still fancy them to be top six and have a chance. I felt I did right by the manager. You know, I did right by our fans. You know, it was just the right thing. It was probably the wrong thing to do financially, but the right thing to do from everything.
Like the bigger picture.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. My dad said, you're fucking mad. Like, yeah, you know, like mad because he saw the offers and whatever else. But like, but he still said, brilliant, doing that deal B, but he's like, you're mad. So, and there's a lot of stuff in the future as well, on top of the thing.
It's not like he is your only sellable asset.
No.
I'm sure that changes the calculation as well.
We had five this window. We were getting bids on five players. We had seven figure bids on five players in this window. So when I always talk about, we have assets all over the place. We do. So no, we're in a good place. And we shit the bed on Saturday, but we're in a really good place. Like we have assets all over the place, playing wise. So I felt good about it. I thought it was a crappy window from a spending point of view. You know, the Premier League, I think, spent 900 million less and 930 million less. I'd love to add up where the 80 million went that they did spend. Did most of that leave the country? Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to the Premier League, DFL. Everyone has to fix it, whereby they can shop in the EFL and it doesn't count, because that's going to hurt our industry. That's going to hurt our business. That window would have hurt a lot of clubs to trickle down. But that needs to be fixed. That can't happen again. Like, you know, you go spending $1 billion, $2 billion to suddenly spending 100 million. Mm-hmm. That's hurting everybody.
Something's broken, obviously.
Yeah. And I was delighted with our trickle down that Barnett are going to make seven figures on a deal, you know, when we get paid and whatever else. And that's our whole relationship with Barnett, you know what I mean, and whatever else. And again, that helps non-league, because Barnett will sign players, and, you know, that's how it should work. You know, so yeah, it was mad. It was fun. It was roller coaster. It was phones. But I looked at my wife when it all closed and I had a drink again. And I was like, have I made a mistake here? Not going for plan A and whatever. She goes, no, you got to follow your heart. And I was like, I'll follow my heart. And then I said to her, we're probably fucking losing Saturday. But I follow my heart. It's like, we lost after the last window against Portsmouth. And then we lost over. And then we went in great runs. So it's fine. But yeah.
But this is why you do it, right?
Yeah.
The whole adrenaline and everything that's going on. And
That's who we are. You know, taking a player for 130 grand 18 months ago and turning it into millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of pounds is what we're all about.
Yeah.
It's you know, and by the way, not for a striker, for a winger. Yeah. Like, you know, that's who we are. That's what we do. And now, you know, my wife said to me the next day, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm finding his replacement for the summer. Because that's what we do.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, because it's only, like you say, 18 months or so. I remember being in your office with Baz when you were talking about him before you brought him in. And, you know,
I'm going to give Barry and his son all the credit for that signing.
Yeah.
His son and Barry, his son goes to a lot of the Barnet games. I've been told me for 2 years to sign that player. For 2 years. And probably the timing was right. If he signed, when we signed Jack Taylor, he wasn't ready, but physically he was ready. So I'm going to give them massive credit. Yes, Grant McCann gets credit for being the manager at the time we signed him and for the first few months and bed him into the team. I'm going to give Barry and his son massive credit. And then I'm going to give Darren and all his coaches massive, massive credit for how they've developed him and a lot of our younger players. But yeah, you're right. You were there with me when we were doing that deal. And I'd said at the time for Bradford to sign him. Yeah. When we were kind of like on the fence about signing him, I did. I think I said on the podcast, Bradford should go and sign this.
Yeah, you did. And Baz wanted to know why we hadn't done yet, because he was still on the market.
Yeah. Correct. You know, so, but I'm also happy for Efron and his family, and he's got a young family, and you know, so everyone wins. Coventry got a great player. The boy gets a great move.
How does someone like, so Baz was there when he, you know, him and his son have scouted him, they've seen him, they've taken a chance on him, but now he's gone on to bigger. So yes, you've had 18 months and you're going to have 2 years. You've got financially, but is there some sadness as well that he's kind of moving out of the building?
I'm already sad, even though he's not, you know, he's on loan, and we were winding him up giving him a new shirt number, because he was a loan player. He's going to lose his number 10.
It's like number 62 or something. Yeah.
But all the players were really happy for him on Friday. I was speaking to the manager and everything else, and it was like, they were all really happy he got his move. But, you know, we played Barnet. I want to say I was at Comic-Con just before COVID in San Diego. I can't remember if it was 2020 or 2019. Mm-hmm. But we played Barnet in a preseason game. And Jack Taylor and him were in the game. And the gaffer was here at the time, Darren. And we were like, do we like both of these players? And then Barry's son, Adam, has gone a lot to the Barnet games, and Barry goes a lot to Barnet games. They've watched him a lot and have been driving it. Like, you've got to sign him. So I always remember some of the fans, we sold Sammy Schmodek, slaughtered me for selling Schmodek and signing the replacement in non-league, which was Efron, you know, at the time, you know. So again, that's just how it works, but they don't always hit, but that's how it works. But, you know, look, we're going to replace him, but that's in the summer. And if he can drive us to a promotion and he can get all the things he wants, well, then happy days. So that was the window. That was the madness of the window. Did Did Bradford do any business in the window on deadline day?
On deadline day, we brought in Callum Kavanagh from Middlesbrough. 20-year-old striker, been on loan, I think, at Newport and somewhere else. I think was pretty prolific in, you know, at age group level. And so, yeah, that's
did you sell the striker, the boy that everyone was in for?
No, Jake Young.
Oh, okay.
So 2-0 down at half time away at Swindon, we decided to put him on. And, you know, in doing that, then took him out of contention. So he's sticking around. And it's probably been the only bright light in the last few weeks for us. But, you know, we can go there in a minute. You, from a results perspective, so you obviously lost, you were saying, against Wigan 3-2 on Saturday. You beat Wimbledon 2-1 in the...
Yeah, 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, yeah, 3-1. We batted 3-1. Them early on. Yeah, we batted them early on. We scored 2 and 3 minutes. Then Wimbledon came strong in the second half. We were under the cosh. They scored, I think, in the 88 minute.
Yeah.
And Ricky, thank fuck, who came on, he was brilliant. He pressed the life out of him the last 20 minutes and then scored a great goal, ran away from the corner and basically an open goal.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday was a weird game. We had 28 shots. I think they had 4 shots. They scored three times. Defensively, we weren't great. Offensively, not great. You know, probably the worst we've defended for a while. I'm thinking it's a one-off. Wigan are very good on the counter. They're very good technical team. They know what they're doing. You know, bar their points deduction, they'd be top 8 quite comfortably.
Yeah, didn't I read Darren saying it would be one of your toughest, if not toughest, game of the
season? Yeah, yeah. And I hate when he says shit like that. So, yeah. But yeah, because I always get like OCD about it. Shit, you keep saying that. You said it about Lincoln. We fucking drew there. So stop saying that. So, they obviously are. I think we've lost twice in 24 games to the same fucking team. So, you know, new bogey team. But we huffed and puffed. We controlled the game. We had 65% possession. We had 28 shots. We just weren't at it in both boxes.
Yeah.
But what I love about us is there's no fucking quitting us. Like, we're 3-0 down. They score goals at the weirdest times. They score when we're on top. Then in the second half, they score again when we're just starting to warm up. And then you're thinking, okay, they're out of 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I fancy us here. And they fucking score. So it was almost pitch perfect for them. Scored right at the right time. So then we score in the 92nd minute. And then we score in the 94th minute. And I swear to you, if that game went on another 4 minutes, we'd have won the fucking game. There's no quitting us. I love that about us. That was like last year.
Giving up. You're 2-0 down.
No. We'd have lost 4-5-0. Those two late goals were so important. And it was just all about, you know, it's who we are. And there is no give up in us. And we're playing the way we play. And I like that about us. And yes, it's shitty to lose at home. And yes, it's shitty for the run to end. But also, runs end and new ones start, and somebody's going to get fucking murdered, Phil.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get murdered, and everyone wants to keep talking about what we're missing and what we're doing and what we're not doing, whatever else. I like to look at it the other way. You keep doing those things, somebody will get fucking murdered. Mm-hmm. And I mean that football score-wise. So I don't know when, but somebody's going to get a good scene too, because it's impossible to have 28 to 30 shots a game and not to go out and murder somebody.
Yeah.
And that is going to happen, and the boys are in a great place. And yes, they shit the bed on Saturday and lost, but it's not the end of the world. And we all know that the run into the season starts in March. So we've got to just get at it and keep at it and be there. And then March comes and the sun comes back and the pitches are better. People are fucking exhausted and we've got our four wingers all fully fit and fucking rampant. That's what we have to be. So yeah, it's one of them things. It's like, we're not Man City. We're not going to win every fucking game. We want to try to, but we're just not going to.
And even Man City aren't winning every game.
Well, fucking Liverpool and Peterborough, I think, have lost twice in the last 5 months. And fucking they fucking chose the one weekend. I'm back in the States and they both fucking do it.
Get it all
over
with.
Destroyed my weekend.
Get it all over with in one go.
Honestly, my daughter's an Arsenal fan. Has given me that next to me on the couch yesterday. And I'm cursing fucking the Liverpool goalkeeper fucking multiple times. And I'm just like, what a weekend of results. Both my teams hardly fucking ever lose, and they both do it in the same weekend. What are the statistical odds? But anyway, so yeah, it was Saturday was Saturday. I kind of had a feeling, like it seems after every window, we're kind of like that shit happens, do you know what I mean, or whatever else. And you know, it is what it is. Look, we're a young team. We're not pitch perfect. Things are going to happen. Yeah. People think we're going to walk away with winning the league and whatever else. It's not going to happen. You know, it's going to, you know, take us time, and we're going to be there. We're going to try. But like, don't expect like fucking, you know, you're starting graving trophies in fucking March or April. That's not how it works, you know, unless you're a team with a 30 million quid wage budget.
another couple of tests coming up now. So you got Exeter away and then Wickham away, I think, the next couple.
Yeah, and you have to go and win at those places if you want to win promotion. So it doesn't matter who you play, whether it's Wigan at home, it's Exeter away, it's Wickham away. No game's easy in League One. And you know, but you've got to go into those games positive and go, look, we play well and we do the things right, we'll win those games. If we don't, we fucking won't. And that's just the way it goes. And obviously, we got Blackpool away in the EFL Trophy, and everyone's gone on about it being the worst draw. It is what it is. Like, I, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to win that cup, you're going to have to beat some good teams along the way, and you're going to have to travel along the way. Yep. We've been fortunate. We've had a few home games. So we're going to have to go away to Blackpool, or one of the best teams in the league. And, you know, we want to win. We're going to have to go there and win. We don't. Yep. We fucking don't. So if we win and you win, we've got a final where we've dreamt about. We'll sit there and record the podcast live from Wembley.
We went to Derby and won. You know, so anything's possible. I mean, like you say, you get through these. I wouldn't
beat Blackpool before away. So you know, it's like, who's at it? It's just, it's another Tuesday night. It's another long trip. But if you start letting long trips, if you start letting bad pitches, if you start bad luck, all those things, you start talking about them. You let them in your head. Yeah. You don't win promotions in that. You win promotions by playing on car parks if you have to, or on rugby fields. You win promotions by just fucking getting on with each game in front of you and not worrying about traveling along on a Tuesday, traveling along on a Saturday. Great promoted teams go above and beyond. They don't get distracted and they don't make excuses. So you won't hear out of me, our pitch is shit. You won't hear out of me, we've got too many games in February and March. You won't hear out of me, we've got to travel 500 miles. Because if you want to win promotion in a league like ours, you have to fucking do the hard yards and all those things. Period.
Well, like you said, two difficult games, but games we both got to play, but the final is still on. I mean,
100%.
It's the best. I'm happy with, as happy as I could be with the draw, but saying that, it's still, you know, we're playing a League One team and a very good League One team at that, but anything
can happen. One-off game. Yeah. It's a one-off game. Is it at your place?
Yeah.
Right. Big crowd, one-off game, trip to Wembley, 40,000 Bradford fans will show up at Wembley. It's a fucking, you know, this is what it's all about. And you've had a shite season so far, you know, on off the field. You win a trophy at Wembley, your season's completely different. Mm-hmm. It gives your fans something. So, you know, yeah. So let's see what that's the 17th or 20th of February. So it's not too far away, I think. Yeah. So let's see what happens. I've got a lot of work on over here in between and whatever. But yeah, look, the window's closed. Everyone's got what they've got and they've got to get on with it. And yeah, there's teams around us did a lot of business. But at the end of the day, we were never going to do loads of business. We didn't want to. What we never wanted to do was have fucking too many players in the squad. Yeah. We feel already like we got the right blend. We brought a Brentford boy in, who's fucking fantastic acquisition. Brentford did us a massive favour as insurance, because Kwame's not, you know, ready yet. Mm-hmm. He will be in a few games, you know, when our front four is properly back together. But if Michael does well in the meantime, you know, and obviously David Adjiboy, more competition. And that's just the way it is. So, yeah, it is what it is. So let's see. But I'm excited, you know what I mean? It's great football. We're turning down fucking millions and millions and whatever for players. It's exciting. It's you know, we're in a great place, you know, regardless where it ends up or where it finishes. Under that, our 21s went to Spurs and fucking battered them 3-0. We got a striker called Pemi, who's a number 9 people are going to love. He's quick. He's big. He's got no football background, bar playing 10 games for a non-league club before we got him. He's like a student in a college. An academic, a real, you know, intelligent young boy, and he is raw, but he's got so many tangibles we love. And let me, to my 21s coach, I ripped this hole off because he made the mistake of messaging me during the game. And I had to apologize to him later when I was on a long walk after we lost and said, look, I'm emotional. Everyone knows, if you listen to my podcast, don't fucking contact me on match day. Like, late at night, we win, do it late at night. But he was so excited about how our 21s played and, you know, how this Penny had played and whatever else. So I was, you know, I did apologize to him, you know. And but we've got, no, it's just, I'm really excited. We've got like our academy is like fucking, yeah, it's exciting.
So where do you find a kid like that then?
Barry. Barry goes to certain games because, again, he'll get tips from his son, Mike Scout, in the weirdest of places. And Barry will ring me and go, I've heard about a boy at such and such. And I go, get in your fucking car. We ain't got a game. Go and see him. Mm-hmm. He rings me and he goes, like him. I'm like, throw him in the boot of the car and let's get him into the 21s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's doable. He's on a long-term deal. He's a project. So we signed him. He couldn't play for us legally, even though he'd pre-signed. Yeah. And he finally could play for us in January League. He could play in our first team now. Okay. And he's a lovely boy. He's strong. He's big. He's quick. He's everything we like in a centre forward. And yeah, don't be shocked if he makes his debut for the first time before the end of the season. You've heard it here first, because he's a project we like. He's got a. I'm not going to put him under pressure. There's a bit of Ivan in there.
Yeah.
He's got a chance. He's only 19, 20. He's got a chance. But we've got some fucking great young players coming through. My God. We've got four players. Well, I shouldn't say this because they're not pros yet. We've got four of them in our under-18s and 17s that are 15, and they're quicker than Ricky. And they're all in forward areas.
So how much, you know, because we've talked a lot over the last few years about the investment in the academy and getting cut to and getting the dome. How much is it based on facilities now as well as recruitment that you're able to nurture them, or does the facilities help you with the recruitment?
No, the recruitment and the coaching outweighs the facilities at the moment, because our facilities aren't as good as they could be. Yes, the tent, the luxury tent, I call it, the dome was great.
Yep.
Our pitches, obviously, we've put money into, and everyone's moaning about our pitches at the moment. I spend fortunes on pitches, so anyone accuses me of not spending money, I'll show them our balance sheet. We spend more on pitches than we've ever done. But we have to improve all the time, and we're looking to add new pitches as well at our training ground. So our coaches have done great. You know, Dan, who runs the academy, I'm going to give Jason massive credit. He hired him months and months ago. We now have Anthony, who's come in to help Sense at the 21s. He's an ex-manager of Woking. We have 18s. We've got Jimmy, who left Cambridge United. 16s. We've got some really, really good coaches. They're not going to be with us forever. Mm-hmm. And what we're now doing is we realize there were players in our 18s and 21s who are older than our first team players. So what Dan's done is he's moved the age groups up. Mm-hmm. If you're 15, you got to play in the 16s, 17s. If you're 16, you got to play in the 18s. If you're 18, you got to play in the 20s.
So you're not capping out where the age limit for each one of the levels.
Right. So we've gone quality over quantity.
Yeah.
And we unfortunately released a lot of players. And we've like gone right down to just quality. And then we do a lot of one-on-one coaching. And that's the way we're going. And we've already got a chart where we've identified a 13, 14, 15 certain colors of players we think nailed on. Mm-hmm. Nailed on. Where we track them now. They get a lot of individual coaching. And then we do a pre-pro deal with them when they turn 16 to 17, so that it's protected.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, not next year, but in two seasons' time, we're going to have some players. We've developed our own Jack Taylor-type central midfielder, which I've been moaning about for years. So we've got some. And then we've got the two young fullbacks in the 21s, Harley Mills, James Donnelly. They're our future. So, yeah, they're coming. They are coming. 3 years' time, there's going to be some fucking talent on our first team from that academy.
Where are you on giving them exposure to first team football down the in the non-leagues versus having them within age group?
Some yes, some yes, some yes, some no. Some we feel can do it, some we want more with us to coach.
Mm-hmm.
No disrespect to say going down eight levels. We're not sure they're going to get the in because it's part-time. They're going to get
that's
the coach
what I always wonder. With us. You know, when you see kids going to smaller clubs down the pyramid, yes, first team football, but...
Some of those we do. We know they're not going to be with us. We're probably going to release them at the end of their contract. So we're giving them a chance to go and earn a club move.
Yeah.
We'll bang them out. Some of them we do because, like Charlie O'Connell, he's ready to go out. I think he went out on loan today. I forget where he's gone. He's gone top of non-league. So again, you know, he's ready. He should have gone to a League Two club, you know, with all fairness, you know. And some of them, like I said, will go to clubs further down. They're not going to make it with us. So we're giving them a chance to get themselves a proper pro career. We don't want them just on the scrap heap when they leave us. We want to try and help as best we can. Mm. So it's a bit like that, you know. But I'm really, really excited about the academy. I'm excited about, I've always said, this best in class, my favorite new term. And we feel we're there. And we're like, it's going to be a couple of years. So I'm still going to have to recruit for the first team for the next 2 years. But by year three,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have, there's going to be a period where there's going to be four or five at once. They're going to go bang. They're going to come in. And it's going to be a great group of players. And by the way, some exciting players to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, exciting. Like, again, but listen, we've already got some young, exciting players. So, anyway. So, that was us in the league. You drew on Saturday. You had a 0-0.
Yeah, we had a 0-0 at home to Wimbledon. We lost away at Swindon a couple of weeks earlier, or the week earlier, 2-0. We beat Doncaster in the EFL Trophy. Just general, you know, it was not pretty. No one's too excited about it. You know, how soon can the season end? And you know,
what has to happen
the
in the summer
trophy?
What has to happen in the summer? Tell me from your perspective, what has to happen? Because this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, and I get it. While we've done the podcast, we're kind of like, you know, yo-yoing promotion, COVID, and you know, back to the champ, out of the champ, Darren, no Darren, back to Darren, and you're kind of like there.
I think I saw some stat about three out of the four last League Two seasons, we had 37 points after 30 games, or something like that, in each one of the seasons.
Right, you know. Okay. So something has to change. Tell me the three key things you would do this summer as Bradford. If you were the CEO or owner, what are the three most important things and rank them in order, please? What will you do? I know what I've got to do in the summer for me, regardless what league we're in. What are the three things you need to do?
So I think that we're always going to be challenged with lack of investment. That's always going to be a problem. But for me, I think that we need consistency of approach. So we need to have the same approach, the footballing philosophy. And I think that that's something that, you've talked about, goes all the way through the levels. Yep. You can have, it's not cheaper players, but you can stretch your budget further. I think if everyone has the same philosophy, because you're looking for a certain type of player, they fit in. We've gone through so many cycles of this style, that style, this style, that style, just ends up with a hodgepodge of a squad who are not fit for anybody.
They can't. We have an identity now, even the academy. If you go watch our 16s, 17s, and 18s, they play 4-2-3-1. They play with wide players that are rapid, quick. They play with a nine that presses, not a target man, that presses. We have, and our centre backs split and pass, and they roam. So we have through. Whether Darren's here or not, that's how we're playing. That's who we are. That's what we're going to do. Yeah. Nail your identity, keep your identity, and hire to that identity, not in someone else's.
I'm a big
identity.
Believer in that, and the reason we're going on these cycles is because, from a business perspective, we have to sell the season tickets to get the money because there's no investment coming from the owner. That's the only thing that's driving the ability to pay wages. And so it's all, so this hype cycle, this continued hype cycle, we have to get off the hype cycle. And, that's a lot easier said than done, of course, if you end up with, 10,000 season ticket renewals next year versus 15,000 season ticket holders. But that's where we've been going. And every year it's like papering over the cracks to try and, let's get us so we can sell those 15,000 season tickets again.
The one's identity. What's number two?
Number two. I mean, I would rather see us, in terms of recruitment, recruit younger, rawer players than the 30-year-old, got the experience, because those kind of players, like, we've always gone for players who are probably underpaid for some reason for their experience, and there's a reason for that, and oftentimes that reason is because they're injury prone, as an example. So you're buying these players who are the players who can play in front of a large crowd, who have the capability to take us higher, who could probably play in a higher level than us. But if you're injured half the time, then, that's no good to anybody. So I'd probably take a look at fitness, injuries, who you're kind of, discounting people based on injury, their injury histories. And I just take a kind of a bigger perspective of that than I think.
Identity, recruitment.
Yeah.
What's the third thing?
What's left?
Message to the fans from ownership.
Well, yeah. I mean,
communication.
I think that's the big thing for that is that we have to be open and real with the situation we find ourselves in and not set false hope. I mean, you've talked before about hyping things up, and sometimes you want to do that, sometimes because you genuinely feel it that this time it's going to be, but that can lead to boom and bust. And that's what we've been through. I think everyone needs to be on the same page. And that's so far from the last few years away from where we are at the moment. There's so much, when you think you can get behind a project, you can kind of go with take the rough with the smooth. There's no football team out there wins every week. Like you said, every football team has periods of success and oftentimes long periods where there isn't a great deal of success. But you've got to feel like you're building towards something, because that's where the hope comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think there's a lot of hope around at the moment from the fan base generally. It's like, just end this, and start again next time.
Well, let's not depress our hard truthers. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to some other talking points.
So that's where I think we are. Now, around the leagues, since we last recorded, your man Jürgen announced that he would step down. And, while I'm sure that that's been done to death over the last week or so.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that?
Got it. Mm-hmm. Came up my Twitter feed. Couldn't believe what I was hearing. I thought it was April Fool's. I've always said that he's the kind of neutralizer. you know, he's protected an ownership that doesn't invest maybe like some of the other big clubs. You know, whoever they recruit is going to have to do the same. I'm not sure somebody's going to put up with that unless they're a younger manager. What he's done for the club, you know, has been evolutionary. You know, winning a Premier League title for the first time in 30 years. Mm-hmm. Just the football, the identity. I understand why he's done it. I understand he's probably fucking exhausted. He's full tilt. If I was a football manager, I'd probably last 2 years. I'd need a break every 2 years because mm-hmm. I'm full tilt. I'm not comparing myself, but his personality is all in.
Yeah.
He's all in. And if he can't give everything, he's one of those people who's real. Because most people are like, nah, pick your 15 million up and just get on with it. But no, he's not like that. And even if he was poor, he'd still fucking walk. So I think he needs a year to recharge his batteries. I think you'll see him at Bayern Munich mm-hmm. in a year or two. I don't think the previous guy is going to last too. The guy at the moment there is going to last too long. We'd love Alonso. I'm not sure we'd get him. Because Real Madrid might be sniffing around him. Mm-hmm. And I can't outside it. I think of too many candidates I'd love. I don't want somebody who's in their 50s, 60s. Yeah. I want somebody where it's Liverpool 2.0, or you can now call it 2.5 because you're going to have a new manager. They're younger, they're fresher. You want new ideas. You want, you know, I think they're going to have a good season. I think we're going to win 1-2 trophies. Not going to win the league. I've always said that. I think Man City will win by a canter. Yeah, really devastating. And I think the Premier League's losing another great character. And I think, you know, if Pep left in a year, you know, the Premier League is like, fucking, what are you left with? Mm-hmm. So, you know, a real, real shame.
Yeah, this is where you wish that Steven Gerrard had been on a better path from a management perspective. Yeah. It just never worked out for him, did it?
It's not him. He's not. With all due respect, some players just don't make great managers. In my opinion, it's not him.
Yeah. Someone said to me, what about Brendan Rodgers coming back? And then, you know, they proceeded to, you know.
That's not going to happen. So
do you think that it would be a manager that comes from overseas?
I think you look at the Brighton guy. I think Leicester guy might be an outside chance, you know, but, you know, he's getting a bit of criticism, I think, from Leicester fans for keeping too much of the ball or whatever else. It could be the German guy. I think they were talking about the Mesut Nagelsmann or whatever else, who I'm not really fond of. Alonso would be ideal because he's Liverpool DNA. Yeah. I really, really don't know. I mean, you know, Klopp's number two is leaving. Did they give him a chance? He looks like he's got a bit of character.
Is going, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, the whole coaching staff.
Promoting from within.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that, you know. So I really, in answer to the question, I don't really know, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, an outside chance, you know, or an outside shout would be, I think somebody who's going to manage anyway at the top and going to get a chance, but they won't take a chance on them now. You'll have to prove it would be Russell Martin.
Yeah,
I think when he takes Southampton up and he finishes top half of his style of play, I think bigger clubs will come in and take him.
Now, do you think that Liverpool are likely to go the safe route and name a name as opposed to looking for somebody who's a little bit more unknown?
I don't know. They haven't got a sporting director. They haven't got a manager. So they got two key roles they got to fill in the summer. So look, you know, they got the Klopp hiring right. I was kind of angry about the Brendan Rodgers sacking. So they got that one right. I have no answers. I don't know. I really, really don't know. So I'm kind of like anxious about it as a Liverpool fan. Like, I am anxious. I think Arsenal are getting stronger. United have got new ownership. They're going to get stronger. Yeah. You know, Man City are inevitable. And then you're going to have Chelsea eventually are going to get there as well. Tottenham are flying under Ange. You know, Newcastle are the richest club in the world. I'm genuinely concerned that if we don't get it right, we're going to fall to the back of the line.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to the Championship. Darren Moore got sacked.
Huddersfield. He's won 3 and 24. Yeah. That's terrible. That's incompetence. That's terrible.
Because earlier in your reign, you know, you didn't keep managers around for very long on occasions. Does that really stick? Will another manager say, look, he just did a bad job? You know,
No. I think it's poison chalice, but they went and won the game 4-0 at the weekend in there. They fucking like battered somebody. So
if it were
they obviously, so they're obviously like decent enough, you know. And he just did a shit job. It happens. Doesn't mean Darren Moore's a shit manager. You know, he got Wednesday up. He did what he did to us. Yeah. He'd done previously well. I'm sure he'll be back. But he's just, some managers just have a bad run. They do a shit job. Yeah. He did a poor job. To win 3 games in 24, you've done a poor job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you hold your hands up, you move on. And many of these managers who've done poor jobs end up getting other jobs. It's amazing. So I'm sure he will.
So a couple of transfer things. By the time we publish, this appeal will probably be known, but Blackburn have attempted to sign Duncan Maguire from Orlando. He was on the plane going to Blackburn, then was told it was off when he was on the halfway over the Atlantic, went to Sheffield, was waiting on Sheffield Wednesday, then Blackburn told him it was back on again, hot-footed it back over to Blackburn to sign, and it seems like they didn't get the paperwork in place in time. So I think that's what the appeal is waiting on.
What I don't get with some of these deals is, why do you wait till that day?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you obviously knew a couple of days before you were trying to sign a boy from America. That's a more complicated transfer. That's foreign jurisdiction. That's different, like, you know, regulations. What on earth? Listen, I'm not criticizing Blackburn. At the end of the day, who knows? I don't know. You know, there's got to be a simpler way of making things happen. I think with DocuSign nowadays, there's no reason for any of that to happen. Like, you know, the one in August that happened to us, that wasn't our fault. I know exactly what that happened. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you got to have all your ducks in a row. So I feel for Blackburn. They're having a horrible run. But they sold an 19-year-old for 18 million quid, which, you know, gives you hope again. You know, you get it right. You get in the championship. You get a good graduate from your academy. You're fucking making some serious moolah.
I think they were waiting on that to close before they could make the.
I understand that. I get that. You know, they're running themselves. I think they have to spend what they bring in. I think that's just the way it is, and that's fine. Okay, and I think there's some great people behind the scenes at Blackburn. And to get 18 plus four for that. But listen, Palace did good business. I think he's a wonderful young player. You know, and Palace are going down that route where they're signing younger, talented players. So I like that approach. But Blackburn, I think they'll be okay in the end. They've just had a bit of a on and off shitty season with Sammy Schmoddock's been the standout. But, you know, their manager's had a tough run because they haven't had that explosive amount of money to spend on players and, you know, losing Barrett and Diaz and everything else. And Sammy stayed in. And I think they're rather young. But I think they'll be fine. They'll be back. But what a deal that was.
And another transfer was Ali Al-Hamadi from...
boy, I tried to buy multiple times. Yep. Fair play to him. Fair play to Wimbledon. In fairness to Wimbledon, they'd always promised to ring us if they had a deal. And when they rang Baz and told him Ipswich were on, we were like, good luck and good night. Because you're not competing with that. Yeah. You know, we had to go up last summer to be able to sign him. We knew that. And he was like, big target for us.
So he only joined Wimbledon, what, a year or so ago?
Yeah, great business. I'm going to tell you how it works.
What changes then? So what changes in a player that was available on 12 months ago or there or thereabouts?
I know his agent really well. And we'd had a coffee about 18 months ago. 12, 18 months ago. And we had a coffee talking about football and stuff. And he told me, obviously, the story that he'd been released when the champ, he went to Wickham. He wasn't getting it at Wickham. They loaned him, I think, out. And then Wimbledon signed him. But he always had potential. He was young. It just hadn't come out yet, you know. And these things happen. Like, that's life, you know. The worst part of this conversation is that this agent told me, killed me, he showed me the message. He messaged somebody in my academy a few years ago. Somebody in recruitment and whatever else about having him in on trial.
Yeah.
And we never got back to the agent.
Yeah. The ones that slip away.
And I'm like, for fuck's sake, but that happens all the time in football. And here I am a year later trying to pay a mil and a half for him when I was trying to sign him, you know what I mean? And whatever. But I think Ipswich has signed a fantastic player. I really like that signing. And I think he's a good young talent, good age, scoring goals. I like the way he plays. I like his pace, his movement. He's going to play hard. Definitely. Great business from Wimbledon. Fair play to him.
And then into League One. So Nathan Jones was confirmed as Charlton manager yesterday.
Yeah, good move from him. I think
we said before, big club, you know, club waiting to be.
Massive club. I think he's had a hard time getting back in since his last sacking. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, great opportunity for him. Great club. Great opportunity, great fan base. Yeah, well done, Charlton.
And, you know, another point in League One, so Bolton, the firm Ludonautics, I think they're called. So they're run by Ian Graham and Michael Edwards. They were behind Liverpool's recruitment process.
Yep. I'd heard about this a few weeks ago, to be fair.
As opposed to paying them, they've given them shares in the club. What's your feeling on that?
I think, you know, the owner, Sharon, of Bolton deserves, you know, benefit of the doubt in any decision that people might not agree with because she's pretty much got all her decisions right. So it's not what I think. I guess it's what your manager thinks.
Yeah.
I guess if you do a certain recruitment a certain way, and it's based around this, and they've had a solid manager for a good few years now, I guess it's explaining to them, we're doing a new thing. So it's how open managers are to new things. I'm sure he's open to it. I'm sure it's going fine. Both are a big club. I've said this already. You know, the guy's known Mug, who's doing it, who's come in from Liverpool. He did very well at Liverpool. He's turned him down. So he obviously believes in it. Not something I do, because obviously recruitment is a big part of what I do with Baz and everyone in the building. But, you know, I think you have to be open-minded to all of these approaches now. I think we live in a world now where you can easily dismiss things.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, no, actually, this is just the way the world's going. The whole share thing, yeah, that's good value. You're not having to pay silly fees and you're giving them somebody a small bit of equity. That's brilliant. Because if it works, you know, it's win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
So again, who might question the Bolton owner? She's done a magnificent job since day one going in and saving the club.
Yeah, you look at, where they were and where we were. And they're on the journey. And
she's made a lot of good decisions, lot of good decisions that have led to this point. So again, I think if anyone's criticizing her, I think she gets the benefit of the doubt that she's obviously very shrewd and knows what she's doing. Fair play to her. Good on her.
So we'll just go to a couple of questions before we wrap
up.
So Stephen on email, I know this is something back when you were in the Championship last time we talked about a little, but he says, Dara has previously talked about expansion of the scouting network for Posh.
Yes.
If we go up, would there be a European scouting capability in place that we could exploit to maybe help in the Championship?
Yes. Yes. I'm doing my plan A and plan B. Mm-hmm. And then plan A is international scouting. Yes. Yes is the answer to that. Yes.
Now, when you start building international scouting kind of networks, is the model, that the scouts are freelancers and now you're kind of contracting with them on your behalf, or do you build your own infrastructure around that?
No, so I'll find some people who are basically working those places for us. They'll still be not freelance, but they'll have other jobs.
Yeah.
You know, but they'll have a chance to, as we improve and do well, they come on board full time maybe. But they will scout and analyze exactly how we like to do it.
Yeah.
Nothing will change by the country and the language.
Yeah.
So everything will be done around our metrics,
the same
and
system
we do, and everything right down to the template we use. Yeah. We have great templates for right down on all the players. So nothing will change except, like I said, languages. Some people, their English might be a bit different than normal and whatever, but they're going to be foreign scouts, you know? So that's something I'm embracing. I'm definitely going to embrace that. You know, it's time.
And then we have Greg on email. He just asked for thoughts on Gillingham's new ownership so far. So 13 months in, suggested that the former owner is still being involved, and any advice that you have given them if they'd reached out, like you previously said, sometimes new owners in the game do. Have you had anything to do with Gillingham since the new owners came in?
No, I know Scally's still there because Barry speaks to him, whatever else. Look, I think the new Gillingham owners have put their money where their mouth is. They brought a lot of players in, have spent a lot of money. I know some of the wages they've paid. So can't criticize them at all. They seem to have done everything right. They don't seem to over interfere. I think they've kept Scally in there like I kept Barry, because obviously Scally's got, even though me and him don't love each other and don't get on, he's got years of experience.
Yeah.
He's been up, he's been down, he's whatever else. He's not a mug. You know, they've got some good things. They've got Kenny Jackett involved. They've got some good people behind the scenes. So I think the Gillingham owners have done everything you do as an owner. That's right. Yeah. They pay their bills. There's no criticism there for me.
What's the onboarding process isn't the right word, but when you're coming in, you buy a football club, you've not owned a football club before. We're seeing a lot of folks coming in and doing that. What's that learning process look like over the first 12 months?
Because I'd say there's a lot of Vaseline involved. There's a few of them have got taken it right up to you know what, you know what I mean? Like from agents. But for me, it was easy because like I said to you, I had a process, I had a way I wanted to do it. I had Barry working for me. I had other people working for me as well that were in the club, you know, watching what was going on. I'm not a mug. I think for some of them, you know, it's they use agents, they use whatever else, they bring in people. So there's some great stories, there's some bad stories. It's not always going to be perfect. So my best advice to any incoming owner is FaceTime Darren McAnthony. I'll tell you, and that's not my ego. That's me saying I'm happy to have a free conversation. I've spent 18 years doing this. Somebody who is looking at a couple of massive championship clubs who's based in California, I have done that. I had like a long FaceTime call as a favor to somebody to run them through the process on recruitment, on staff, on people, on the pitfalls and what can happen and this, that, whatever. Went through everything. This guy's looking at like one of the biggies and I have a good relationship, really, really good guy, tech guy. And I had a really long chat. I feel like I should have sent an invoice afterwards, you know, I was on, but he was like a terrific guy. And I think any club who gets him are going to be very lucky because his heart's in the right place. So, but again, I warned them about, you know, who's introduced you to these deals? What's their cut? Are you keeping them on afterwards? Who's your point person? You need your own Barry Fry.
Yeah.
Let me give you advice on how to do that. So, you know, I should really start a consultancy firm for foreign ownership who should pay me consultancy to advise them on how to do it.
That's your next career, your next football career.
There you go. There you go. There you go. But I'm happy to do it as an owner because I love the EFL and I want good owners and I don't want any more Reddings. I want, you know, more success stories. I want more Boltons. I want less Reddings, horror stories. So, you know, as an owner, you know, you can never be jealous of people's success because you want our league to thrive. Mm-hmm. You want everyone to do really well. So anytime I can help, I'm joking about charging. I will help because I want our league to do well. So, so that's it.
And, you know, and that's why people like Paul Scully stick around, or why owners keep people like, and I'm not just highlighting Gillingham, but it happens up and down the country where, you know, when you have change of ownership and regime change, you often have fans who think, well, they want nothing to do with those that were there before. And why are they still talking to the CEO? Why are they still involved and everything? But they know where the cobwebs are and they
100%.
Know.
100%. 100%. Absolutely. I can tell people 5 quick points straight away to look for things that are coming your way when you buy in. So, yeah, absolutely. So, look, well, you know, we just want the EFL to be in a better shape. So, thank you very much, Philip. Thank you to all the fans out there. Appreciate your support. Apologies for 2 weeks later after the last one, but, you know, we'll try and be as regular as we can.
Yeah. No, and of course, keep those questions coming. Contact@hardtruthfootball.com or just tag us on social, DM us, all those things, and we'll get them added to the list. But
thanks, guys.
Next week, I hope you have a great week and we'll talk soon.